Hey now, everybody. Welcome to the Cardinals Stand Out in Your Career podcast presented by the SVSU Alumni Relations Office. I'm Nick Taylor, your Executive Director of Alumni Relations at SVSU. Today, I'm excited. I have a wonderful speaker. I'm going to talk her up first before she can say too much, but she's an alumni board member here, a 2006 alum of SVSU, and currently our graduate admissions coordinator, Tanika. Tanika, welcome. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Awesome. Well, today's episode is all about pursuing additional education after your bachelor's degree. So we're talking, in this podcast, we always like to talk to our alumni base about different types of professional development ways in which they can better themselves, better their career. And I can think of lots of different topics, but the one that comes up the most is talking about graduate work. What happens after you get your bachelor's degree? We all walk across the stage and we get excited. People are there cheering us on. We get the diploma cover. You get to give me a high five. It's my favorite part of the job. And then you get out into the real world and you start working and you talk about what's next, right?
Right.
So what are some of the main reasons people pursue additional education after they earn their bachelor's degree that you see?
One of the primary purposes of pursuing a graduate degree would definitely be more career opportunities, whether that be a person wanting to stay with their current organization and wanting to move up into a different position, or whether they want to pursue a career with a totally different organization. That can also include pay increases once they get that graduate degree.
I like that.
Also, maybe meeting personal milestones, like that's something they've always wanted to do. So mm-hmm. they pursue that graduate degree as well. And then some are requirements of their field of work. So, for example, occupational therapy. Once upon a time, you only needed a bachelor's degree, and now mm-hmm. it's mandatory that you have a master's degree. So sometimes it's a situation like that, too.
Yeah, very cool. You know, I think back to my experience. I came to SVSU, got my undergrad, started working here in the admissions office. And then the first thing I was told by my mentors and by other folks was like, listen, now's the time. Do this as soon as possible. Go back and earn your master's mm-hmm. degree. I'm sure you get folks from all different stages in their career
yes.
coming back. But what do you think is the most common stage in which people decide to start a master's degree?
It really depends on their field of work. Some of them feel like, oh, well, let me get a year under my belt first. Sure. Or like you said, mm-hmm. you know, they may just start their position and then they're encouraging them right away, you know, especially if there's some type of tuition reimbursement or something like that in the play. Then, they want to, you know, get started right away for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. So what are some of the most common options to further your education after your bachelor's degree? You know, I talked briefly about my experience getting my master's at SVSU, but what are some of the things that people can do? And then also what's important to know about for alumni, what can SVSU do for them?
Well, some of the options would be that graduate degree. So just getting that master's degree. And it depends on the field of work again, because some fields may require that master's, some may only require certification.
Sure.
So we have those who pursue a teacher certification, for example. So they only have their bachelor's degree and then they don't need to necessarily go beyond that unless they want to move up into like a superintendent or a principal position or something like that. But sometimes a certification is most important above a graduate degree. And we do offer all of that here at SVSU.
Nice. And those certifications, are those all run through the different college departments, or is that a separate office?
So as far as the teacher certification, that's College of Education for sure. They like to handle that on their own, and they're the masters of that. So, you know, we like to refer people over to that teacher certification mm-hmm. advisor that we do have there. And then we have our postgrad certifications too. So that's for those who do have a master's degree and then maybe they just want to maneuver into another field.
Sure.
So for example, we have a postgraduate certification as a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner.
Say that three times fast.
Right. PMHNP. That's what we call it.
I love it.
So yeah, that's for those who have a master's in nursing already, but maybe they want to maneuver over into that psychiatric mental health capacity. So
that's awesome. And that's a relatively new program, you said?
No, that's not new. It's been around for a while.
Been around? Okay.
It's very popular.
Uh-huh. Yes. Very cool. Yeah. So that's an example of something very special to you
sure.
in yeah. that college. You know, Tanika, in your role as the coordinator for graduate admissions, I'm sure you talk to all sorts of people who are coming in and they're probably interested in the graduate degree, but they've got a lot of things to consider.
Sure.
Can you talk a little bit about what factors should an alum consider before going and deciding either to pursue a master's degree or a certification or any of those continuing education portions?
Sure. So I would say the first one would be overall career goals for sure. Like, is it beneficial to have that graduate degree? Is it going to bring you a pay increase, or is it just simply going to be unnecessary debt that, you know, that you're adding to your plate? Also, your desired field of study needs to be considered. Make sure it's the program that's for you and that fits your needs and your career goals. Consider the institution and its reputation. You want to make sure you're choosing a good institution. You want to be one that...
Something like Saginaw Valley. Okay, I hear. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, you know, it's like the best one. So, also, time commitment is huge. So, needing to know how long it takes to complete the program and how much dedication is required in order to be successful within that.
Can I interrupt you there? Is that something you can help with prospective grad students, right? So I'm an alum. I'm out there starting my career. I now think, man, you know, I should pick up an MBA, right? And that will really help me move faster in my career field. Mm-hmm. But right now I'm working my 9 to 6. Sometimes it feels like 9 to 9 job, 10 days a week, right? Mm-hmm. Where does someone get the information about, okay, what is the real commitment to this program time-wise? Is that something they work with you? Can you talk about that process?
Yeah. So sometimes I can give that insight. So for the MBA specifically, I could definitely give insight on that.
Sure.
So for example, someone that's working 9 to 9, the MBA is good for them because it's 100% online and it's asynchronous. So they don't have to worry about having to log in at a certain time. They'll just know when their assignments are due and they'll get them done by that time.
Yeah.
So it's very flexible. So if you're a night owl, if you're a morning person, you can get them done whenever you can.
Sure.
So it's very beneficial with that.
Okay, very cool. That makes sense. You know, I'm just thinking, one of the things I always love about SVSU is, and I always tease, I'm the connector guy. I'm never the guy that has the answer. There's not a lot of answers up here in this brain, but I know who knows.
For sure.
And it's one of those things where, okay, if I have that kind of question, you're the person that we can go in, sit down, and kind of help navigate that process. And I've always appreciated about SVSU is that there always is that person, right? It's not just a call line or something. There's somebody there to talk to.
Yeah. And if it's any questions that I don't know the answer to, then we can always pull in the program coordinator, because we do have that. And that's definitely the guru in those those programs.
So what's a program coordinator? Like, what do those people do? What's their job?
So the program coordinator is a faculty member that's assigned to that program, and they're the lead for that program. So ultimately, the program coordinator usually comes in once that applicant has been accepted into the program, and then they pretty much pick up from there. However, during the application process, if there are any questions that I cannot answer that are coursework specific or fieldwork specific, I'll always pull in that program coordinator so they can get that insight ahead of time.
Okay, that's awesome. Yeah. So, you know, you talked about that, you know, looking at some of the reasons to get a program and, you know, is the employer going to pay for it? Mm-hmm. You know, am I going to get a pay raise out of there? What are the real career benefits of pursuing additional education? You know, are they consistent across industries?
No,
I didn't think so.
No. So some fields may see a pay increase. For example, social work.
Sure.
You know, they may have that bachelor of social work, but once they get that master's, they'll see that pay increase as a result.
Yeah.
You know, then on the other hand, when we consider like computer science or information technology, for domestic students specifically, there's really no benefit of a master's degree. So we do see that a lot here. So our CSIS program, our computer science and information systems, is most popular for our international students because they actually need that graduate degree when they take it back to their home country.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's really, I always think, because I think sometimes we look at those master's degrees or graduate degrees and say, okay, I need to go and get this, and kind of, you know, goes into my next question. We always think of ROI, right?
Mm-hmm.
For a degree program. Mm-hmm. Like, if I attain this credential, what am I going to get in the end? And so, you know, can you talk a little bit about how someone can weigh those long-term ROI benefits for a graduate degree? And then I want to take a spin at it after you.
Okay. So I would say the primary way to do that is to determine the overall salary possibility of their field of work. Does the financial gain outweigh the debt that you could possibly accrue? If the degree costs more than, you know, what you ultimately make in that field of work, then it really wouldn't be a win.
Yeah.
You know, so
I think it's interesting. I bring it up because a lot of times we have this delayed gratification, right? When we talk about education, we earn, there are certain degrees, you know, nursing, we earn our nursing degree. We go out, we know that we can become a nurse. We got to pass our NCLEX. We got to do things like that. Right. Yeah. But there's that light at the end of the tunnel and near is the outcome. And then there are other degrees where it's not so clear.
You know,
I'm a proud 2-time alum of the institution. My undergrad was in education, and my graduate was in educational leadership. And that graduate degree didn't come with, okay, now you're going to earn $10,000 more per year.
Right.
That'd have been nice. but it did open the door to other possibilities that I wasn't expecting in the long term. So I think part of it, when we talk about ROI for degrees, especially, I always look at what's being gained, you know, kind of like you said, what's being gained in the long term and what's the possibility. Mm-hmm. And then how likely does that make me, I hate to say it, but you're kind of talking about wagering, you're kind of betting on yourself, right?
Yeah, it's true.
You know, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to bet that the degree program, what I've learned from it, is going to help me be more successful in that field. Mm-hmm. And it's not always guaranteed. And I think there's sometimes that's the disconnect that we get along with. So, okay, I'll get off my soapbox. Sorry. I love the work that you all do, and I'm very proud of the work I did to get my master's degree.
Absolutely.
and proud to be an alum. So,
yeah.
All right. So let's get off a little bit of the ROI experience, and let's do some comparison. Okay. Give me a comparison of getting additional education, going and getting my graduate degree compared to good old work experience. The thing that everybody asks for, but you have to have it in order to get it.
Yeah.
Right. What if you had to compare those two, how would they compare for you?
I think that's another situation where it depends on the field. So again, with IT, more hands-on experience is far more important than any education. You know, I know some people who have a bachelor's degree in computer science, and you know, they're doing very well. They don't need that master's. Then I also know someone who has no college degree, only certifications, and makes six figures. So, you know, sometimes it's just, you know, that experience is more important than, you know, getting the formal education, you know. But then when you consider social work, education is very important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, learning how to interact with people, you know, critically think, learning how to address social problems, things like that. That's something that's not always natural for people.
Sure.
So to pursue that degree and get that education in that, you can teach them how to, you know, maneuver within that field of work. And that can only be gained by getting the education and pursuing that master's degree.
Correct me if I'm wrong. What I think I hear you saying in a lot of these in our discussion today is it's all about people finding the right path for them.
Correct.
And what's right for you could be very different from me.
Absolutely correct.
I think, you know, that going back to that point about having people like you, sorry, I'm talking highly about you right here, but having people like you there to sit and talk and figure out what is the right path for someone individually is something that we can't lose in higher education down the road.
Yeah.
Okay. So speaking about challenges and things we got to do, what are some of the biggest challenges that professionals face when pursuing education while working full time? Now, I'm going to give you a big challenge on this question. You ready? I want you to answer that question. What are some of the biggest challenges without using the word time?
Ugh.
Yeah, you can't do it.
Without using the word time. Yeah.
So what are some of those challenges?
I would say the biggest challenge would be the program format.
Okay.
So
that's a good answer without saying time.
Yeah.
Come on. I wasn't even going there. Okay. So talk to me about the format. Why does it make it difficult?
Working full time and trying to go to school full time can be hard, you know?
Yeah.
So if that program is offered 100% online, then there's a lot of flexibility.
Yeah.
You know, again, that especially if it's asynchronous, then, mm-hmm.
You know, you've used that term too much in a little inside baseball. I know what that means.
Asynchronous?
Could you talk about what it means?
Yes. So asynchronous means that there's no scheduled time to log in per se. So when a program is asynchronous, you don't have to say, oh, I have to log in at 3 o'clock for class. No.
Sure.
You'll just know, okay, my 10-page report is due this Friday before midnight, and you just get it done whenever you can.
Okay.
So that's where that asynchronous comes in. Then if you have hear a program that says synchronous, then you know you're having to stop what you're doing and log in, which is not very beneficial when it's an online program.
Right.
You know, so but that program format, you know, online, hybrid, where you're online part of the time or face to face, and then of course you're 100% face to face.
Sure.
That could definitely be a challenge for someone that's working full time.
Yeah. How about cost? I mean, let's talk. People are going to be worried about that.
Yeah.
And they should, and we need to. What are some of the things? How do we, is financial aid available to us? Like, talk to me about how a lot of our graduate students pay for their education.
Mm-hmm. And the majority do use financial aid.
Do they?
Yeah. So there's a lot of people that really surprised me that didn't know that they could use financial aid for graduate school.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, oh yeah, you can, you know. A lot of people don't know that every human being has a max of financial aid.
Uh-huh.
So that's something you have to consider too. If you've maxed it out for someone, you know, you kept changing your undergraduate majors and now you've maxed it all out, then sometimes that can be a downfall. But ultimately, you can use financial aid. There are very little scholarships for graduate level, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. It depends on the field of work. You know, there's some for nursing, there's some for education, but outside of that, they're few and far in between. So you just kind of have to look for them, or sometimes our program coordinators may know about them and then they can offer those up. But also employer reimbursements, tuition assistance, those are huge in grad school.
I think that sometimes we talk about the scholarships. We you know, when you talk about college scholarships, everybody thinks about the high school application process, and we forget later on. But also the fact that there are some of those employers out there that do reimbursement and help out with those expenses.
Yes.
You know, that isn't as common in the undergraduate level.
Mm-hmm.
And so that helps much more. The other part of it too, I think, is when you look at the overall cost. I mean, it is an investment. And just like any investment we make, whether it be a good bet or otherwise investment, we've got to plan it out ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, I keep hearing, coming back kind of the theme of this is, if somebody's out there considering a graduate, they got to come and meet with people like you. Mm-hmm. Sit down and plan this out so we can really make it a long-term successful experience. It's not just a push and play. I don't come in, put my dollar in, push the button, and the degree comes out. So,
and it's nothing like undergrad either. So, you know, as you say that, it's, you know, an undergrad, if you begin, like myself, I began as an occupational therapy major, and then I switched to criminal justice, which is two totally different spectrums.
Sure.
Long story. But, you know, it's easier to change those majors in undergrad, where in grad, it's not. You know, if you decide, oh, well, I don't like public administration, I want to do public health now, you just can't switch it. You have to stop, drop from your program, reapply, and it's a whole nother process. So it's totally different for grad level than undergrad.
Yeah. Are there any other big differences that you see between grad and undergrad that maybe people don't understand as much?
I would just probably say the scholarship part, which you've touched on already. Those are the two major things.
Okay. That's good to know. Good to know. Okay. Let's talk about now. You're looking at Nick, grad student. I'm out there just getting started, pursuing my MPA program, which is a great program here at the institution. What advice are you going to give me to stay motivated and focused so that I get all the way through the program and I don't stop?
Sure. Okay. So I would say you have to set some clear goals that you know that are, I wouldn't say easy to obtain, but that are, you can logically obtain.
Yeah.
Break down tasks into smaller, manageable steps. So don't just look at a task and say, oh, I just got to get to it. Like, take those steps to actually get to it so that you can see more success pursuing those. Create a consistent study schedule. That's huge in graduate school. You know, it's a lot of undergraduate students that wait till the last minute to do something.
Mm-hmm.
No, don't do that in graduate school. You have to have a schedule. Also, celebrate your small achievements. So don't be too hard on yourself. you know, when you're in your program. And if you get a C on a paper, it's like, it's not the end of the world. You have time to bring it back around. So even if you get a C and then next time you get a B+, that's a small achievement. Yeah. Let's celebrate that, you know?
Absolutely.
Seek support from your program coordinator if there are any other mentors or peers that are available. Mm-hmm. That's huge. And learning how to manage your distractions, I think, is a big one. Usually people that are in grad school, they already have families or mm-hmm. they're already, like you mentioned before, working full time. So you have to know how to cut out the outside world and focus on, you know, your assignments or your classes when you need to.
Yeah. You know, and it kind of brings up a topic for me. You know, we talk a lot about remote learning, you know, post-pandemic yes. world, and yes. remote learning has kind of changed a lot of things, and limiting your distractions is really more important now than ever,
for sure.
Making sure you get it done. So how has the rise of remote learning kind of changed postgraduate education? What have you seen over your career here at SVSU?
I would just say it took away that personal aspect of things. Yeah. So everybody, you know, the world we live in now is like, we want it now, we want it quick, we want it easy, you know? Mm-hmm. So online is, of course, it's popular now, but it just takes away that personal aspect. So no more of that face-to-face so much, and you're having to learn how to adapt and interact with people over the internet, you know? But like you mentioned, the pandemic, it kind of prepared us for that. So that's just kind of the world we live in now. So
Do we offer a lot of remote courses as part of many of the different programs? You mentioned that a little bit earlier. Yeah. But is that something that you've seen a bigger impact, a bigger change mm-hmm. in the last 4 or 5 years here at the university?
For sure. So the majority of our programs are online.
Oh,
or hybrid even.
Yeah.
Just a hybrid option. The only programs that are fully face-to-face that I can think of is our occupational therapy program. That one is 100% face-to-face. Everything outside of that is... it's pretty virtual.
Right. You know? But if I'm a student and let's say I'm doing like, I'm very aware of the MPH program, MPA. If I'm a student going into that and I want face-to-face, that's still an option too, right?
It depends on the program.
Okay.
So our MBA program has a hybrid option, which is technically just for international students because they have to have that face-to-face component. Sure. Every now and then, if I'm not mistaken, the program coordinator can kind of finagle some things so that if there's a person who wants to attend a class in person, then they can make that work for them.
Okay.
But for example, like the public health or public administration, those are 100% online. There's really no shaking that. So.
Oh, all right. Well, that's good to know. See, obviously we were teasing earlier about how much older I am than you. That's something that is completely different from when I was completing my graduate degree. I mean, we had to be, there were online components, mm-hmm. but it was a component that we still had class time dedicated in that program.
Yeah.
All right, Tanika, we're getting close to the end. Sorry, I ran you through the ringer. I know it's tough, but I want to talk, you know, we always end each of these episodes with kind of that overarching big piece of advice. And I think I know where you're going to go with this based on our conversation, but I got to ask, if you were going to give one big piece of advice to someone who's just uncertain about continuing their education, what would that advice be?
I would have to say, and I did kind of touch on this before.
Yeah.
Is the benefit larger than the risk?
Yeah.
You know, per se. So even if, you know, I mentioned before that some people pursue a graduate degree for a personal milestone. So even if you don't foresee a huge financial gain, is that reaching that personal milestone, is that large enough for you to just feel like, oh, the financial dynamic of it doesn't matter. You know, I just really wanted to achieve this. So if you can say that that's the case and this is like a larger win for you outside of all that, then go for it for sure.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, I very much appreciate your time. I just want to say it's an awesome pleasure to have you as part of our alumni board. You bring a lot to this. People don't know, she's kind of a big deal. So our vice president right now. She's making things happen. But getting to know you through the alumni board and then seeing your work here, I think you're an awesome example of an alumni that stands out.
Thank you.
At the campus community, but also at the community at large. So
if you're
out there, you're welcome. If you're out there and you are an alum who's considering going into a graduate program, whether it's a master's degree or one of the other options here at SVSU, I'm going to encourage you. You got to come meet my friend Tanika. Get coffee, do whatever it is. I'll take care of it. I'll pay for it. But I want you to come in and meet her and talk about those options here at SVSU. And until then, until you come back here on campus, I just want to remind you, we always love it as an alumni when you stand out in your community. We can't wait to see you visit here back on campus. Thank you so much and take care.